This talk was given at Insight Meditation South Bay. For more information and a schedule of our events, visit the Insight Meditation South Bay website at www.imsb.org. For information about online programs, visit the Bodhi Courses website at www.bodhicourses.org. Bodhi is spelled B-O-D-H-I.
About practicing with pain. And I want to just start off by saying that I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert by any means. I don't have any training. I'm not a therapist. I'm just somebody that has experienced a lot of pain and has really turned towards my practice as a way to be with my pain. And so just as one fellow traveler on this path, to just kind of, you know, share some reflections, compare some notes. So would love to hear if any of you are interested in talking more after this talk. Please come up and share with me what your journey's been like. So I think that the easiest way to start talking about reflections on pain is to really start at the beginning for me. So I started experiencing pain about 10 years ago. I was working in Silicon Valley. I was, you know, in an IT job that was just making more than enough money and, you know, didn't seem to have any kind of worries that I should have, but yet I wasn't happy at all. I really thought that, you know, life was about, it was just some kind of mathematical formula for happiness that I just hadn't figured out yet. Something along the lines of having, you know, one spouse and one house and two cars and one pet and maybe a picket fence in there somewhere, and all those elements combined was happiness. And I wasn't happy yet because I hadn't figured that out yet. But instead of being able to actually narrow down that formula for myself, I ended up having really excruciating pain one day. Just woke up and felt like somebody took one of those meat mallets for veal scallopini, just went to town on my hands while I was sleeping. I woke up and it was excruciating. And within a day or so of trying to fight with the pain, I ended up having to tell my boss I can't do this anymore. I had to take some time off. What I didn't realize was that was just the beginning of a really, really long journey in which my entire body started to feel that way. And I really struggled trying to figure some way out of pain. I'm one of those fortunate people that just doesn't respond very well to medication. So I get all the side effects, none of the benefits. I was having real trouble trying to find some kind of therapy, something that was going to help me. And within about a year or two, I lost my ability to really function. So I lost my ability to go back to work and, you know, do anything that I previously enjoyed. And with that, I really just lost myself. I lost the sense of who I was, sense of accomplishment. In that long process, I also ended up losing all the things that I'd collected in my life to make me seem like it was of value. I lost my spouse, my house, those cars, all those crazy expensive collectibles that I had no idea why I purchased now. But everything just kind of went away. And I found myself in a place of really just suffering with pain because my whole body was in pain and moving was painful. I ended up trying not to move, like that was going to be the answer for me. And I ended up just kind of living in bed, not moving. And eventually what happened was my breath started to become painful. So the one part that I couldn't help but to move was also painful for me, and that's when things got really bad, and I wasn't able to be with my experience anymore. And when you start to suffer in that kind of level, when you have that kind of pain and nothing helps and logically there's just no solution out of it, I think it's very easy for the mind just to start to think about suicide. Like that for sure, that is a way out of pain. And yet, I didn't want to do that. And during that whole process, I really remember there's just one image that just kept coming up in my mind's eye. And there's this very famous black and white photo of a Vietnamese monk that self-immolated. And a few of you might remember, it's I think it was during the Vietnam War, but he's kind of sitting in samadhi, and the wind must have been picked up because you can see the flames off on one side, but you can still see his face. And it's just so peaceful. Like, there was no tension in the brow, there's no screaming or moaning. And I remember just thinking, how is that possible that somebody who was obviously in more pain than I was wasn't actually looking like he was in pain? It was amazing. And I figured, you know, I think that guy figured something out. And I needed to know what that was. He had the secret sauce, and I was going to figure that recipe out. So I figured, okay, you know, if there's nothing else that I'm going to do, I'm going to figure out how to meditate. That, to me, was the calling. I was living in Arizona at the time, so I didn't have too many options to figure out how to meditate. I went to the library. There wasn't any local friendly insight meditation center to really see. Eventually, I just couldn't figure it out through reading books, tried finding a few teachers that didn't really understand how to work with pain at all. Found myself asking monks at a Sri Lankan monastery, you know, please, I need to learn how to meditate. I'm in so much pain. Will you please show me? And they very kindly took me in, taught me breath meditation. And, you know, with her kindness, really taught me a bunch of suttas. We did morning pujas. It was wonderful. But the only technique they showed me was breath meditation. And so for somebody that experiences pain all over and even breathing is painful, it was really torturous to try to do that. And the only instruction, you know, mind wanders, something else comes up, back to the breath, over and over, a million times, back to the breath. And I did that for about a year. And I really thought that enlightenment was this thing that one does through a path of self-torture. And that it was going to be completely worth it. Because all this time that I was inflicting pain upon myself and being with my pain, I was going to get enlightened for that. And enlightenment was going to be awesome because I would never experience pain ever again, and it would be amazing. So I just got to sit here with my breath over and over. Took me about a year to realize, that's just not working for me. Eventually, I found my way out of the monastery and started sitting actually with other monastics that really helped kind of correct my view of what this path and practice is all about, and especially Longpor Pisano at the, I guess he's the former abbot now, of the Bayagiri Monastery. When I met him, he was, you know, he'd been practicing for, you know, over 50 years ordained, and just came up to him with the same kind of desperation. I'm in so much pain, you know, sometimes it feels like I need to pass out. I'm starting to dissociate. Tell me, what's the secret to being able to meditate with that kind of pain? And I remember him, you know, very, very kindly taking a moment to reflect what I had said and giving me this response that the idea of having a right technique, a right meditation for pain, following the Eightfold Path correctly, wasn't so much an idea of right and wrong. It's not a black and white thing. There's no wrong meditation. There's no right meditation. But it's more about being able to be in tune with your experience of suffering and to really harmonize what your experience is with other factors. So not only is there mindfulness and investigation and energy that's needed for enlightenment, but there's also joy that's needed, tranquility, equanimity. All these factors also need to be taken into account. And especially when one's experience is painful and full of suffering, that's when one needs to really really put extra effort into being in tune with their experience. And that kind of blew my mind, because that was not what I had heard up until then. I really, you know, was hearing other things that the Buddha said not to, you know, take in any kind of pleasure in the senses. I think it's the very first discourse that he supposedly offered in the setting in motion the wheel of truth, where he says, you know, those who indulge in the sense pleasures are low and coarse, vulgar, undignified, ordinary. All those things that I thought, that definitely is not enlightenment. That's not what I want. Don't meditate on pleasurable things. Go back to the unpleasurable things. That was kind of what I was thinking. So to hear, you know, this monastic with so many years tell me, no, actually, when you're in pain, that's the time when one needs to actually uplift the mind through objects of meditation that are pleasurable, that give joy, that give a sense of relaxation, of well-being. And it's when we can include those experiences into what our awareness is that the mind finally has balance, that there's finally some tranquility there in order to eventually investigate what the experience of suffering is. So I'm not advocating here to spend all your time just, you know, blissing out and really, really great experiences, because that's a real disservice to what it is to be human. That being human is also about suffering, and our duty for suffering, for dukkha, is to really get to know it. It's this, what one of my teachers says, it's getting eyeball to eyeball with your suffering. And that's eventually what we want to do. But when suffering is so great, when it's just so enormous and there's no possible way you can even look it in that direction without getting overwhelmed, before we can even start to become eyeball to eyeball to it, being able to balance what our experience is with pleasure. So what are the ways that we can actually do that? Longpo Pasano is a big fan of self-compassion, which is why I chose that meditation to guide you in today. Being able to offer yourself kindness and compassion, to really feel what that is like. I find that when you're really suffering, when there's a lot of pain, whether that be emotional or physical, it is really hard to just give yourself compassion for that. It feels, at least for me, that the well of compassion is long dry and there's just not a single drop in there. And so imagining getting a resource of somebody else offering you that compassion can be really, really helpful. It can lift the burden of feeling like I need to do this for myself. And we can notice there are already other people that are doing this, that have done this, that will continue to do this for us. So that's a really great way of balancing. Some of the other ways that I really enjoy balancing is through the other heart practices. So for any of you that have spent a considerable amount of time with your suffering, I'm sure you're starting to realize that working with suffering is really, it's a heart practice. And then growing the heart and the heart's capacity is really needed when we're suffering a lot. The great thing about that is that you can grow the heart's capacity through heart practices that aren't painful. There are a lot of great Brahmavihara practices, for example, those boundless abodes of the heart that can nourish us with a lot of really good feeling, and that grows the heart's capacity, and it doesn't diminish when you're actually suffering. In fact, I find that the heart's capacity is even larger when you're suffering, when you're used to actually turning towards qualities of the heart that feel good. So, of course, compassion is a Brahmavihara. There's also metta, loving kindness, which I'm really starting to appreciate lately, has so many different flavors, just this unconditional kindness that we can bring. For me, I've started to notice how there's a lot of metta and gratitude If you think about it, the people that at least I know that are really grateful in life, it seems like they just radiate loving kindness all over the place. And it's just gratitude. They're able to find gratitude in even the simplest things. And that's really challenging with pain, because especially pain makes it just seem like there is nothing else in the world but suffering, and it's all there, and it just feels huge. But there's always something that's in the experience that one can be grateful for. I know that for me, a lot of times, just waking up and realizing, oh yeah, I can breathe. Okay, there is something to be grateful for. May not necessarily be painless, but hey, I'm breathing. That's great. You know, I think that the practice of gratitude was really, really dependent on noticing just the small things. Because it's very rare that we have these moments in our life where just everything lines up and the universe is telling us, oh, you're a great, wonderful person. But just noticing the small things in life that can give gratitude. One of the things I love doing is really noticing just how awesome it is to take pleasure in what you see. So it sounds kind of weird, but just like the tiniest hint. So right now I'm really seeing a lot of reflection from this lighting in here. It's giving me a lot of pleasure. I'm just feeling a lot of gratitude, like, wow, I can actually see, and seeing is this awesome miracle right now. A lot of gratitude in being able to do that. I also like how that practice is just very short. You don't need to sit for 45 minutes in a gratitude meditation. While it's wonderful to be able to do that because you can experience these deep, profound levels of gratefulness, you know, pain, at least for me, is not just when I'm sitting on the cushion. I experience pain through every activity in my life. And so I'm a big fan of being able to use practice in everyday life too. That's for me the value. And so being able to do just a short practice, just a few moments of gratitude, it still grows the heart, just this micro moment. One of my teachers, Shinzen Young, is a big fan of this is the way to really start to integrate meditation when one doesn't have the time to sit down for very long. Just taking the time throughout the day, these short, intense hits of mindfulness can still grow our capacity of the heart, can still grow our capacity of awareness. So metta, great. Mudita, another Brahmavihara that I love. It's this ability, well, it gets translated as sympathetic joy, which I don't think it qualifies as what I experience mudita as. For me, I think of mudita as more of the joy of joy. When you see joy, it just instantly brings joy into you. I think babies really got this down. When you just see a baby and you smile at it, so much glee comes off of them, right? Like, wow. Somehow we lose that when we grow up. But we can still, you know, we can still cultivate that within us. I think it's all still innately within us. When we see somebody that's laughing, we start to laugh a little. When we see somebody that's infectiously happy, we start to feel a little happiness. It's there. It just requires a little bit of attention to grow. And then, of course, equanimity. One of the final Brahmaviharas, which I love that equanimity is a heart practice. I feel that when you are really suffering with a lot of pain, again, emotional or physical, it doesn't matter. It requires the heart to have equanimity. It's not just the state of mind or a state of body. It's the capacity of the heart to open and turn towards our suffering. Because when we start to open towards our suffering, that's when the alchemy happens. It's so different than our instincts of trying to push suffering away, of just, if it's just a little bit further away, I'm going to have the relief that I need. Just keep pushing and pushing. It doesn't work that way. I'm sure a lot of you know, the more you resist pain and suffering, the more painful it actually becomes. But equanimity, our ability to open to our suffering, to hold it in our heart, so powerful. It's also reminding me of just the harm that we can bring to ourselves with the intention that meditation is somehow going to fix our pain for us. I can't tell you how many times I've sat down with that very intention. Like, I've had profound experiences meditating, and I'm gonna get there again. I'm in a lot of pain, but this sit, gonna meditate through my pain. And of course, bringing the intention that meditation is going to relieve pain is a one-way ticket to a lot more pain. So really, being able to open ourselves to what's going on by being in balance, by bringing forth qualities that are joyful, that give well-being, can give us that evenness to start to actually investigate our pain. And I'm really feeling in me right now just this desire to begin to share with you all the different ways that one can start to investigate pain. And I'm realizing that there's no possible way I'd be able to cover it all with any kind of justice in the short amount of time I have left. So I'm going to offer maybe one or two suggestions just to give a feeling of completeness. So what does one do when we can actually bring balance to our experience through both feeling the pain and compassion or pleasure, everything in, we can feel balanced. What do we do now? I find that even going into a sit and feeling balanced, as soon as I start to investigate my pain, it starts to get a lot worse. So the first thing I would like to say about that is the need to be with the entirety of your pain is a need that's unfounded. You can work with pain by just being with a small bit of it, just spending one drop of pain in the heart, just one moment with it. That's enough to begin to actually work with what it's like to suffer. Again, you don't need to torture yourself into enlightenment. You can experience suffering in just a moment and still be able to work with it. So allowing just a little bit of that into your heart, if you're able to still have a lot of compassion, joy, equanimity with your experience, and still just allow a little bit of pain in. Of course, that's not really an option. Sometimes it's just, it floods in and there's no way that you can actually stop it without really just trying to bring all those qualities that I was talking about of bringing the intention of not experiencing pain through investigating pain itself and that bad experiences. But when you find yourself in that space where it's so overwhelming and nothing that you can do is helping it at all. You've exhausted your toolkit of things and you've thrown everything at it. You can still work with your experience through what you've been cultivating, through your mindfulness, through your awareness and ability to investigate your experience. But again, it's this concept of doing it in a way that's balancing, that's not going to spin you out and overwhelm or tailspin the suffering vortex of dukkha. And we do that by really noticing the pain and noticing states in it that already give this feeling of well-being, that can already give you confidence. Which I know is probably sounding a little strange, like, that's not my experience of pain at all. It does not give me well-being or confidence. What are you talking about? But there are ways that we can still grow well-being and confidence in the experience of pain. So with severe pain, for an example, one of the things that I quite often lead clients when I work one-on-one with them is to investigate how there's still tranquility in the severe pain. That we can experience pain in just one of our senses, primarily in feelings in the body, and it can get to an intense level where it demands so much attention that the other parts of our experiences don't have very much going on. There's a tranquility to them. This is already built in our language when people say that I'm in so much pain I can't see straight. You know, that's pointing to the experience that you can have so much sensations in the body that your brain stops being able to actually process what you're seeing. Well, I find that when I'm in a lot of pain, my mental chatter, just the volume goes way down. Sometimes it's not even present. And I can notice, oh, tranquility. In the experience of really severe pain, there's still tranquility here. So it's noticing things like that. What about this experience can I actually be with that does give me a little bit of tranquility, a little bit of well-being? Now, there might be times where you're with pain and it's not that intense. You're not about to black out or pass out from the pain. There's something else there. But it's still, it's really overwhelming to be with. Other ways that we can bring this the same intention of balance is to notice what's going on with the pain itself in a way that doesn't spin you out in overwhelm. So that's really investigating the experience of pain and to allow it to start to disentangle a little bit. That pain comes in a combination of events. And that's not just this one painful thing, but there's actually sensations that are in the body. There is sensations emotionally in the heart space. There's the recognition that these are sensations. There's that added interpretation of whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, the vedana that we add on top of it. Then from there, there's the evaluation of, is this good? Is this bad? What do I do now? Do I push it away? Do I get more of it? We start to plan. But if we can be with the experience of pain at the very, very first level, just the raw sensations before we start to process it and think of it as good or bad, we can notice sensations at that level start to feel a lot different when we can bring our awareness to them. So we can notice that sensations, typically pain, physical pain especially, there's a lot of movement in pain. And you can notice just the movement of the pain without really giving too much into the rest of the vedana, the thoughts, all the interpretations of what this means. We can have what I like to call background equanimity with all that. We're not trying to push it away. We're not trying to wish it wasn't there. Just letting it be. It's a natural thing not to want to be in pain. But bringing the awareness back to just the movement of pain. Sometimes sensations don't feel like they're moving at all. I think emotional pain for me really does that. And instead, you know, noticing how it's not moving. Is there tranquility in that? All different ways that we can actually work with pain. Yeah, so before I go even deeper and deeper into this and overload you guys with way too much information, I'm thinking right now, I'm feeling very, very settled and full. I'd like to open the floor up if anybody has any kind of questions about anything that I've said. Again, not a doctor. I can't offer you specific medical advice. But I'm very curious, or if anybody's had an experience with something working with discomfort, emotional or physical, that they feel that really helped them, would like to share, please. And if we just want to sit in silence, that works for me too. Yeah. Yes, yes. Thank you so much for sharing that. For those of you that didn't hear that, he's talking about Shinzen Young actually has a whole quadrant in his system of mindfulness all about positivity and different ways to experience positivity as an object of meditation. So what I guided you earlier was using that kind of same orientation to the practice, but through feeling the body. Shinzen goes in much deeper through other sensations. You can see positive things. You can hear positive things. You can give yourself intentional mantras to say or look at things in a way that gives you positivity. So there's a whole different level of experience in positivity that if you're feeling that that meditation that I offered was helpful, I invite you to please check them out and to explore it. It's a great way to really help balance the mind and be proactive and lift the mind out of feeling overwhelmed with pain by giving not only wholesome things to focus on, but sometimes substituting the negativity that naturally comes in through our thoughts. Very, very common. Thank you. Yeah.
I really have trouble with this compassion.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I so appreciate that question. For me, it was really, really challenging to have any kind of compassion or love for my pain. I mean, are you kidding me? Offering myself love? No way was that something that I was brought up with at all. So the idea of even finding somebody in my past that had done that for me didn't land on me, you know. I was able to tap into it a little bit through a pet. I have a cat that I love snuggling with that gives me that kind of feeling of warmth. But I have to say that when I first started doing it, that option wasn't given to me. I was always find somebody, so I was looking for a being, you know, a person. What really helped me with this, and I'm not sure, I'm just going to throw this out at you, but one of my teachers really invited me to investigate the idea of making up a being, some kind of avatar that represents compassion. I think that all of us know what it feels like to be loved, even if we've never actually gotten the love that we wanted. We know what that kind of feels like. We know what it should look like, right? So can we imagine a being that just is compassion incarnate?
Yeah. I was like shifting between this person, that person, and that person. I'm like, well, this is not quite right. That's not quite right. That's not quite right either.
So I can't find any. Yeah, that's a very, very common report, and especially trying to find a being is that, you know, sometimes we'll sit there and we'll, you know, think, oh yeah, that they're this great, compassionate person, and then this, you know, event pops up, like, oh, they weren't really compassionate to me in this one time, and now I'm feeling really horrible. So yes, that's so common. Yeah, it's helpful when you pick somebody that you know that might be there to really set your intention on just that one time. I know that they gave me compassion. Can I just relive that one time over and over again? That might be something to investigate.
Or when you think about place that make you feel good, but then you didn't even understand why you felt good. That one, how are you supposed to feel?
What I'm hearing is actually a lot of doubting yourself and trying to find just the perfect technique.
Perfect source.
Yes, which I definitely resonate with. And just in the next time that you try to do that, you know, see, can you offer that part of you that wants the perfect technique, the perfection, the absolute feeling of compassion? Can you also just give that part of you compassion too? Yeah. And it might be like really, really subtle. So that's the thing about this practice, is it starts off really, really subtle. It's just like a little flicker for me. It's just like, oh, I think that might be love. I'm not too sure what that is, but let's go with love. You know, if that's all that's there, that's more than enough. Yeah. I would say whatever works for you is the best meditation. Again, it's not about the right meditation, it's the right for you meditation. So if right for you meditation is switching it around, if you have a vast resources of different times where you're offering compassion, yeah, every time, just think of something else different. And if you can feel it, that's perfect. Yeah. 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 I'm just gonna add, for me there's a real big opening when I was told about Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva of compassion. And even though like at the time where I was told Kuan Yin, I was like, who is Kuan Yin and why are you telling me about this? I'm not here to be a Buddhist. I just want to get out of my pain. But the teacher was like, no, you can do this. Just imagine a being that is nothing but compassion. And all she wants to do is to hold your pain. Can you give your pain to that being? And I was like, challenge accepted. Yes. Imagining a being shove all my pain on her lap. And that was the first time I was actually able to meditate on my breath without freaking out and thinking like, oh my God, this is just making my pain worse. Yeah, just imagining somebody. Yeah. 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 So I'm hearing you have questions about the desire to really want to practice, to both get out of pain and suffering, maybe some aspirations for enlightenment, and also seeing that holding on to those are actually can cause difficulty in the actual practice itself, a lot of stumbling blocks. Is that basically? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I am. So many things are coming up for me to say about that. It's funny because I still, you know, I love going on retreats and I'm still in the back of my head. It's like, oh, this is the retreat where I'm going to break through pain. It's going to be great. And yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's still a motivating factor for me because I have pain. And obviously, I don't want to be in pain. Who does? So it's still there. I think that I could say that my relationship to my practice has changed in that it's taught me so much about the suffering that I cause myself in really, really holding on to that. I think you touched on to it, how it caused that craving. That's the source of so much suffering in of itself, just wanting something other than what this is. But there's a healthy level of osa motivation too. You know, when you have pain, realizing, oh, yeah, I probably should make some time to sit down, otherwise my pain might get a little worse. You know, I'm feeling a little anxious. I might use a little sit right here instead of just kind of going through my life. So I find, again, it's this ability to balance, you know, just recognizing these needs, natural, normal things that are coming up for us, but also to recognize them as just that. It's just something that's coming up, nothing to really hold on to grasp after. They can be good for giving us a sense of guidance, of balance, of figuring things out. I also just want to say that I really love one of my teachers, Shinzen Young, because he really thinks that enlightenment is this like completely possible thing in this lifetime, here and now. It's not a, you know, stream entering type of thing. Like, if you want to do it, you can do it. It just requires time and effort. I love it when a teacher gives me that kind of motivation and support, because it's just like, yeah, I can do it. This teacher believes in me, you know. So sometimes it's a little bit about inspiration, the motivation. Some people find, you know, teachers that talk about the longer traditional stream entry, many rebirths, as a very inspirational thing. For me, it didn't land right. But I would definitely say that, you know, according to Shinzen, people can come with, you know, the intention of getting rid of, you know, back pain, and through time and effort of practice, eventually, you know, achieve traditional classical enlightenment. It's all very, very possible. Yeah, the power of the mind, it's really amazing. Thank you. I'm seeing that it is 9:00. I really want to honor everyone's time. Thank you so much for coming here. If anybody has any questions or wants to share anything afterwards, I'll stick around. I'd love that. And yeah, so nice meeting you guys.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.